Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
This is Radio Influence. The future is now.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
This is the Crush Sport Performance Show with Jeff Crichel and Craig Moonen.
This Jeffrey, is history in the making.
Jeffrey Mutai in Boston 2011 with a new world record time.
Oh, my God.
2:03:01.
Hey, and welcome to the Crush Sports Performance Show. I am Jeff Crichel. Hey, we're your weekly source for sports performance and athletic development information. A very, very special guest on the show today, the author of Born to Run. The tagline, a hidden tribe, super athletes, and the greatest race the world has ever seen. Christopher McDougall joins us. Christopher, thank you for spending time on the Crush Sports Performance Show tonight.
Oh, I'm psyched to be here. Thanks.
Well, hey, listen, this is a major coup for us, and it couldn't have happened at a better time. You know, we sort of kick off our running series every time this spring, just after the Boston Marathon, and wow, what a marathon it was with that incredible performance there. And I believe, looking at your website and on your blog, you were in Boston at the time.
You know, I just left right before the marathon, but I tell you, what was so cool about that was, have you watched the slow motion replay of the lead two guys as they're approaching the finish line?
It is unbelievable. And oh, by the way, it's on your website. The website is ChristopherMcDougall.com. I did. I checked it out on your website. And man, is that not everything you've been talking about?
It's like they're not even trying. It's so easy and smooth, and this is such a great lesson to us that, you know, running does not have to be this lesson in torture. It can just be this smooth glide over the earth.
Great. Well, hey, we're very excited to have you on again. Christopher McDougall, author of best-selling book, Born to Run, joins us. The website is ChristopherMcDougall.com. And, boy, we are glad that we could capture you and steal you for an entire hour. Boy, I'd really like to start off just talking about this amazing finish with Jeffrey Mutai. 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 2 seconds. You know, if we break that down, that's 4 minutes, 43 seconds per mile. We do this, Chris, we do this little challenge on our show, my co-host Craig Moon, and we do this What Moo Can Do challenge. And when the world record was set back in Berlin for the last marathon, we set out to go see what it's like to try to run a four-minute mile. Man, we couldn't even come close. These guys are doing it for 26.2. Just an incredible, amazing feat.
I go 4 minutes a mile if you push me off the top of a cliff.
Yeah, exactly. There's no question. Hey, this is what we're talking about today. Boy, the book is an incredible read. Again, the tagline is a hidden tribe, super athletes, and the greatest race the world has never seen. Boy, I'm really going to look forward to getting into the guts of this program, but or of the book. But, you know, we look at what's happening with the Kenyans, you know, just talking about running cultures. It seems like the Kenyans have just, they've got something secret going on over there. And maybe we can just touch on this for a minute, because I believe I read in your website somewhere that, you know, it's predicted that the Kenyan teenagers have already logged some 18,000 miles of training before they hit a competition, and before they even step into their first pair of real legitimate running shoes, they've tagged on a lot of miles in those bare feet. And that's kind of the premise of the book, getting behind the scenes and what is running all about.
Exactly. You know what their secret is? They're doing it right.
Yeah, you know, well said.
You know, the problem that we have is we try to always come up with some kind of gimmick, you know, some kind of technology that will trump technique. But you remember, I remember reading about Larry Bird in the off season. Larry Bird would, and Michael Jordan, same thing. They would always go back home and then perfect one skill. Larry Bird would be shooting up 2,000 free throws a day, every day in the off season, even when he was an all-star. That's what it's all about. These guys are just practicing better.
Ah, interesting. Well, we're going to get to the heart of that. But right now, the book, Born to Run. When I first picked up this book, I looked at him going, why? I wasn't too sure if this was going to be a fiction book or what it was going to be all about. I kind of heard the rumors when it first came out. But I'm just going to give you a little background on my running history. I was a strength and conditioning coach for a Major League Baseball team, and I would run with the starting pitchers. I would run sometimes 2-3 times a day, and you just sort of get into it, and you'll love it. Man, oh, man, very similar story to yours. My Achilles started shredding apart. My hamstrings started to hurt. And it got to the point, Christopher, where I was scared, and I still am sort of there. I'm not quite over it yet, but I was scared to run in fear that I would not be able to walk. And, you know, when I picked up the book, and started reading. I'm going, this is incredible. The cast of characters in the book, I'm telling you, first of all, when I first started reading it, I'm going, what is going on here? I couldn't dream these characters up in a fiction novel. Right. And some of the things that I learned in the book has really changed my attitude towards getting back out on the trails.
Yeah, you know, that was exactly my experience, and I think my experience was similar to millions of people. You know, there's something like 60 to 80% of all runners are injured every year, so it's not surprising that people are scared.
You're right, and you know, for you, and I was interested in just reading your story, you're a big guy, you're running, I'm going, man, you know, and you kind of said it in the book as well, you know, hey, these guys are running, everybody's running, why can they run with no pain and I can't? And that's how the book kind of started, getting to the very start of this book, how you got into it after all your adventures with the Associated Press and covering all these incredible stories all over the world, you hunkered down to chase down the answer to one question you had as an athlete and runner, why does my foot hurt? Maybe just enlighten us here. How this whole thing got going, because it's an incredible story.
Yeah, it was a real simple thing. You know, I wasn't a runner at all. You know, I was just like everybody else. I ran a couple of miles a couple of times a week. I was basically just burning off the Häagen-Dazs. And I kept getting hurt, and I kept going to see doctors, and they kind of looked me up and down. They're like, you know, guy, you're 6'4", 240 pounds. Of course you're hurt. You know,
right.
when guys are built like Shrek, they're not supposed to be banging down the sidewalk. And I accepted that. So I gave up running. And then I was down in Mexico on, true story, I was down there to locate a fugitive Mexican pop star and her secret brainwashing sex cult. That was a true story. It was an assignment for the New York Times Magazine.
Wow.
And while I was there, I kept seeing these little pictures or these little images on the license plates of what looked like some guy running in a dress. And then I see a picture in a magazine of a similar guy, a guy running in a skirt and a pair of sandals. And I discover these are the Tarahumara Indians. They are living in canyons not too far from Chihuahua. And it turns out these guys can run, you know, 150, 200 miles at a time. And they're still doing it at 70, 80, 90 years old. And I look at this picture thinking, now hang on a second. How is it these guys are banging out 10 marathons at a time without getting hurt into old age? And doctors are telling me that if I keep running at age 38, I'm going to have to replace my knees and my hips and my ankles, and I need special shoes and orthotics. And that's what led me on the quest to find out what is it these guys are doing that the rest of us aren't.
Well, and boy, I'm sure excited to have you on to get to the roots of this, because honestly, I've read the book, some great information in there. But if we go down the list, let's go start to finish here. You know, why in some cultures, and this is kind of the question, why in some cultures and this tribe, this elusive, secretive tribe, as you describe them in Mexico, how is it possible with no technology, none of the new developments in pediatrics, orthotics, or shoe technology, nutrition, training, physiology, anatomy, and all of our understanding we have in the world, how can these guys go through these incredible, wicked, extreme terrains for hundreds of kilometers, hundreds of miles at a time with no rest and do it without getting injured? There's one quote in your book that, you know, the best runner leaves no tracks. And I think that is a really good place to start this whole thing. One of the keys, and you kind of mentioned to it already, one of the keys to successful pain-free running is learning how to do it properly. And I guess over time, the Tarahumara have figured out how this is done.
Yeah, it was a really cool surprise for me, too. Because, again, I looked at running from the perspective that we all look at it from, that the impact is bad and you don't want it, you're pounding down and all that pounding is bad for your legs. And it never dawned on me that there's a way to avoid that, which is don't pound down, land gently. And then when I started getting into the physiology of running, what I discovered is, you know, our legs are like, they're constructed like golf balls. Your legs are loaded with all kinds of springy, elastic recoil tendons that are only there to absorb impact and help you spring back again. And you experience this every time you climb up on a chair and you jump off. The first time you land, you might be a little bit heavy, but you keep jumping. And after three or four repetitions, you realize that you're instinctively bending your knees, bending your ankles, you're bending down at the hips. And what you're doing is using all that natural suspension in your legs to absorb the shock. After a while, you can land so lightly you don't even hear a sound.
Oh, very interesting. We're talking with Christopher McDougall, author of the best-selling book, Born to Run Today. You know, it's interesting. There's some great characters in your book, as we mentioned, but also some along the way, your research is incredible. And the great thing I like about the book, it takes this incredible story of tracking down these characters, the race comes together, but also your research into the physiology and maybe even just the culture of running and the people you came across. And the first person I'd really like to ask you about is Dr. Joe Vigil. I believe I pronounced that correct, I hope.
Vigil.
Yeah. Dr. Joe Vigil. And one of the things he's looking at as an incredible, dedicated running coach, and this is pretty interesting, he thinks the next barrier for successful running is not going to be in the physiology. He's looking more at character, which is really kind of out of bounds in terms of the way we approach running. And I thought that was a very interesting approach.
You know, the difference between really good performers and the true visionaries and geniuses are, the geniuses aren't afraid to be wrong. They aren't afraid to go where other people will pull back. And Joe Vigil is a guy, right from the beginning, he realized that the way he was going to succeed as a coach was to take every possibility and explore it. And it turned out beautifully because he's the most successful long-distance coach in U.S. history. He's done stuff that nobody else has ever done, like take a cross-country team and absolutely shut out the opposition at an NCAA championship. He had his first five runners cross the line before the first runner from another team. And what Vigil started to really bear down on is this idea that humans really evolved as long-distance runners.
Yeah.
That from our earliest ancestors, we were basically hunting pack animals that were running together as a group. And he thought, well, this is true. Then there had to be something that holds that group together. And what he started to investigate is really what is at the secret of Tatamata distance running, which is that they love it and they love each other. And that compassion and that joy of the activity is what really propels them forward.
Well, we're talking with Christopher McDougall, author of best-selling book, Born to Run. You know, Coach Vigil is a pretty interesting character, and you reference him quite a few times in the book. This whole concept of character, I agree, man, it is it's a real true way. The physiology, to me, seems pretty simple. I mean, you know, training properly, running properly, putting in the miles, the techniques of running, and there's basically maybe two schools of thought, even when it comes to technique. Some guys think, hey, we're just going to run the way you run, but I think we're slowly learning, especially looking through all the data and everything you put together, and especially that slow motion footage of the two runners at Boston that you mentioned. There is a serious technique if you're going to be a successful distance runner. But one of the things that sort of came through in the book as you got into the physiology and the culture of running was this whole controversy about the shoes. And I don't know if you're comfortable talking about this on the air, but Christopher, this is a really big issue. And you brought a lot of things to light in your book that, you know, the normal average person just would never think of in terms of the shoe companies, where they came from, what their objectives were, and really maybe how their goals didn't turn out maybe the way they wanted, or maybe they weren't even knowledgeable enough to know what the running shoe and the running shoe technology would do to runners. Do you think that's sort of the situation we're in right now, or how do you see it after you've done all this research?
Yeah, it's a horrible situation we got ourselves into. You know, it's funny because right now researchers are trying to do a comparison study looking at the prevalence of running injuries prior to the creation of the modern running shoe, and what they're finding is nothing. There is no data on running injuries prior to the creation of the modern running shoe, which basically leaves you one of two things. First of all, if there were no injuries on record prior to the creation of the shoes, then why create the shoes? You know, it's like you're creating a medicine for a disease that doesn't exist. Secondly, if the running injury rate was so low that nobody was even measuring it, what was going on? And you can say, well, people weren't running back then. Well, of course they were. We've been running for 2 million years. The Army trains everybody all the time. The Army has, you know, tens of thousands of recruits. It trains by running. So people have been running forever. So why is it that the running injury rate was too low to even measure prior to the creation of the modern running shoe? And I think it's for a very simple reason. As usual, we keep trying to think that we can outmaneuver nature, that we can come up with a technology that's going to be better than what our bodies were naturally born with.
Right.
And what we created were these cushioned, motion-controlling, stabilizing things we strap on our feet. The problem is they don't work. And what they do is they create the very injuries they're supposed to be preventing.
Well, interesting. We're talking with Christopher McDougall, author of Born to Run. Here's a quote out of the book. Vigil could smell the apocalypse coming. He tried hard to warn his runners. There are two goddesses in your heart, he told them, the goddess of wisdom and the goddess of wealth. Everyone thinks they need to have wealth first and the wisdom to come. But Vigil was coming from the other school. And of course, obviously, quite obviously, he was correct. Get the wisdom first and the wealth will come. And in your book, it's interesting. You look at the demise of the American running success, and it all points to the time that industry kicked off and the almighty dollar stepped in to be maybe a motivator and maybe a destroyer at the same time in terms of running development.
You know, it's funny. Before we got on the phone, I was watching Bull Durham, that movie Bull Durham.
Yeah, for sure.
And I was thinking to myself, you know, imagine you're a young track runner and your coach comes in and starts talking to you about goddesses of wisdom. Like, how mind-spinning is that? It's kind of like
I'm with you.
Bull Durham preaching to meat.
Right.
But I love the fact that this was Vigil's motivating force. He's like, you know, I'm not creating runners. I'm creating well-developed humans. I got to get these people to think and think about everything. And one of the things he could smell happening was you start chasing money, you start worrying about the result, then you're going to lose out on the process. And Vigil was always about the process. Learn how to run, learn how to think, and then everything will fall into place.
Very interesting. We're talking with Christopher McDougall, author of Born to Run on the Crushed First show in this special series on running as the Boston Marathon kicks off with an incredible finishing time. And we're trying to get to the roots of successful running and, more importantly, maybe even painful, pain-free running. And the book Born to Run is a great guide for anybody out there. The science and, of course, the story, we'll get to it in a later segment, but the story inside of the book is great. But some of the science is incredible. You know, you mentioned and reference the Running Injury Clinic, and next week we're going to be talking to the guys out of Calgary, Dr. Reed Ferber, who works very closely with Dr. Irene Davis on the Running Injury Clinic. And the technological advancements are interesting, but, you know, just sort of understanding Dr. Davis's sort of position on where we are with technology and where we're at with running, she's actually pretty surprised as well that, you know, we haven't had a larger impact on, you know, helping runners run healthy.
You know, when you come across a scientist like Dr. Davis, you've got to, like, take off your hat and genuflect and respect to her, because she knows so much more about the body than I ever will if I study for the next 40 years.
You know, right.
She's a PhD.
Right.
She's the expert. She's studied with the biggest names in the field since, you know, decades ago. I show up and start asking her questions. She starts to reconsider her viewpoint. And lo and behold, 2 years later, not only is she doing groundbreaking study in barefoot running, but she's become a barefoot runner herself. And again, that speaks so much to her objectivity and her true orientation as a scientist is wherever the evidence leads her, that's where she goes.
Oh, very interesting. When you said it in your book, I think it was a quote from her, yet the remedies don't seem to defeat the ailments. Very interesting stuff. Christopher McDougall, listen, we really, truly appreciate your time tonight, all your insights, and of course, for authoring that great book, which is, as we know, changed many, many lives out there.
I got to tell you, that was the best interview I've ever had. Call me back in the middle of the night anytime you want.
Great, Christopher. We really appreciate it. And I'm going to hold you to that because I really am fascinated by the work. And thanks once again.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Okay, everybody. That was Christopher McDougall. The book, by the way, for what it's worth, is on the Crush must-read list. We're giving it to all of our athletes and recommending it for all of our running athletes. The science is incredible. Of course, as you heard, Christopher is incredible. His website is excellent, by the way. His blog is up to date, and it's ChristopherMcDougall.com. And I'm telling you what, this is a book that could potentially change your life, and we hope it does. Next week, we are continuing our running special. We're going to talk to the guys at the Running Injury Clinic to find out what is wrong and what they can do to help you out. And we're setting up the stage for, is it possible to run a sub 2 hour marathon? Well, based on what happened in Boston, we're well on our way. All that next week on the Crush Sports Performance Show. We will talk to you then. Have a great weekend. Jeff Crichel, thanks to Christopher McDougall, the con man. Thank you very much. Talk to you next week.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
What do you think? Do you think there's a little bit of hypocrisy that's going on right now? Because obviously WWE was not going to allow at the time Kurt Angle to wrestle for them. Therefore, he went to TNA, right? But now WWE is basically saying, oh, yeah, you can wrestle for us now. However, on the flip side, Daniel Bryan is not being allowed to wrestle, even though he has a desire to do it. And I've actually heard that he's even said he would sign waivers, basically releasing any type of responsibility. My question to you, David, is do you think at any point in time, Daniel Bryan, through Vince McMahon or anybody, will ever get the clearance to wrestle again in their promotion?
No, I don't think they'll ever let him wrestle again. And I think it's two totally different situations. When it came to Kurt Angle back in the day, leaving and going to WWE, to TNA, sorry, a lot of that had to do with personal issues that Kurt was having. They didn't feel comfortable continuing with him. And he eventually did get those personal issues fixed and has been a model citizen, so to speak. And when it comes to Daniel Bryan, you're talking about an extremely, extremely controversial when it comes to these head trauma injuries and the NFL and wrestling and MMA and lawsuit settlements. And everybody's walking on eggshells on this one when it comes to what people are finding out with modern science about head trauma. And so I understand that Daniel Bryan has had other independent doctors sign off, but until your doctor, your WWE doctor, the one you hired, until they sign off and say that they're, you know, positive that there's not going to be any issues, you can't take the chance. What happens if, God forbid, something happens? He has a family now. Now, do I think he's going to wrestle again? Yeah, I think he's, as soon as his contract is up, he's going to go to New Japan, go to Ring of Honor, go to wherever. I think that he wants to wrestle and he feels like he's healthy enough to wrestle. And that's a personal decision. And then it's up to each individual wrestling promotion to decide if they're comfortable with what might happen if they put him on their cards. As far as Kurt Angle wrestling at the pay-per-view, I am pretty darn sure that even though they were in an impossible situation, that he must have gotten signed off on a physical that he is okay to work a match. And Kurt's injuries are more just his body's beat up and his neck, you know, he broke his neck, obviously, in the Olympics, but not so much concussion. So you could work around beat up body and neck issues if you're putting a match together. You can't work around the fact that, you know, somebody may take a bump the wrong way. Somebody might hit you the wrong way. Somebody might slap you the wrong way. I've seen people that got concussions just from getting slapped hard. You can't mess around with that.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.